I'm afraid that some of us often forget that we are all in this together. As we finish off this series of studies on working for the kingdom, I want us to focus our attention for a few minutes this evening on the responsibilities that we have toward our weaker brethren. Last Sunday night, we studied a lesson entitled, Those Who Have Made Shipwreck of Their Faith. And from the text of Galatians chapter 6, verse 1, where we find the instruction that we who are spiritual are to restore those who have been overtaken in a fault, we noted three things that are very essential in the matter of restoring the fallen. Number one, we noted that there is a prerequisite regarding those who do the restoring. Paul says they must be spiritual. In the second place, we noticed that there is an attitude, a specific attitude that's required, and that is the attitude of gentleness. In the third place, we observed that there must be some protective measures taken by the one who attempts to restore one who's gone astray, and that is to safeguard oneself lest he or she also be tempted or carried away into that particular sin. Tonight, I'd like for us to focus our attention on the plight of those that we have sometimes probably ignored. We've sometimes perhaps wished that they would just go away or go somewhere else or find them another congregation where they may worship. Sometimes we may have just wished that they would grow up. Weaker brethren. And on the subject of weaker brethren, I want us to begin tonight with a thought that's expressed in Romans chapter 15, verse 1, and then we'll progress on to some instructions that we find in 1 Thessalonians chapter 5. In Romans 15, verse 1, the Apostle Paul says, the New American Standard Version renders it, now we who are strong ought to bear the weaknesses of those without strength and not to please ourselves. The New Century Version clarifies it a little bit by saying, we who are strong in faith should help the weak with their weaknesses and not please only ourselves. And we're most likely the most familiar with the rendition in the King James Version, we then that are strong ought to bear the infirmities of the weak and to not please or not to please ourselves. As we think about our weaker brethren, first of all, let's consider what our duty is to weak Christians. Brother Burton Kaufman, in his commentary on this particular passage, says regarding verse 1, this is a recapitulation of what was said in chapter 14. Now, you may remember from your personal study, Romans chapter 14 describes and discusses the situation where a weaker brother has an opinion and a stronger brother knows perhaps the true situation of the matter, but because this incident is a matter of judgment and not a matter of faith, then those who are stronger need to be very careful. There are a lot of people who have misused and misapplied what's taught in Romans 14 and used it as a license to do whatever someone may hold to as an opinion. It's not what it's teaching. Romans 14 is a warning toward those who are strong to make sure they have the right attitude toward those who have been imperfectly taught or insufficiently taught or who, because of their background, may be confused on some things. The bottom line is we need to be very careful. And so Brother Kaufman says that the first verse of chapter 15 is basically just restating what all was said in chapter 14, but he says it sheds additional light upon the obligation of the strong toward the weak with the use of the word bear, which is used here, he said, not in the sense of endure, but in the sense of to carry. You may even find some translations that will render verse 1, "We then who are strong ought to bear with the weaknesses of the weak." And according to what Brother Kaufman says, that's a mistranslation. It's not the matter of bearing with, such as putting up with, but he says it's the matter of bearing as in carrying. And thus the strong, those who are strong in the faith, have the definite responsibility for the weak and the obligation to see that they make it. Now I want to say that again because I think that's one of the most important things that I'll say tonight. Those who are strong have the definite responsibility for the weak and the obligation to see to it that they make it. This picture, this middle picture of a strong man who is carrying a little child is a mental picture of the duty that is expressed there in Romans 15, verse 1. It is an illustration of the duty that we have toward the weak, and it must not be hindered by my own sense of personal liberty as a Christian. In other words, you know, I've been a Christian long enough that I ought to have the freedom from having to be burdened down by somebody like you. Or, you know, I've worked hard to be as strong as I am. And I don't have all of the time in the world to put up with someone who's constantly in need of being helped or assisted or carried. Or maybe it would take on something like this. How many times do we have to explain this to you? Have you ever heard those words? Bear in mind, this is all about an attitude or a spirit that we who are strong are to have toward those who are weak. A writer in the late 1800s in the pulpit commentary brings this home to the matter of saving souls. He says, all Christians must take their part in the great work of saving souls. You know, that's what we've been studying. There is much to do. There's work on every hand. Hark, the cry for help comes ringing through the land. Jesus calls for reapers. I must active be. What wilt thou, O Master? Here am I. Send me. The harvest is plenteous. The laborers are few. It's our responsibility to be workers for the sake of the kingdom. And if we're not willing to work, we can't consider ourselves to be in good standing with the Lord. He goes on and he says, all are responsible in a greater or less degree for the welfare of the souls that come within their influence. You know, I wonder how seriously we take that statement. Do we really realize that we are responsible, we are answerable to a certain degree for the souls who come within the reach of our influence? But who are the weak? Who are we talking about here? There are all kinds of definitions. They could be variously described, and no definition would ever really be complete or absolutely inclusive. But the weak, weaker brethren, are those who never seem to go a day without some kind of major spiritual problem or difficulty with which they need some help or some encouragement. They may be those who are so needy in a psychological way that we can never seem to totally escape from them and their difficulties. Every time we turn around, they need some help with something. It could be those who never seem to completely develop the ability to bear some kind of responsibility. Those who never seem to learn Or perhaps those who seem to commit the same kind of mistakes over and over and over. Those who are always in such dire need of help, forgiveness, and restoration. I know what you're thinking. To be quite honest, the plight and the attitude of someone like that can really stretch your patience to the limits, can it? If you're not very careful, you can easily develop an attitude problem that may very well be brought on or hastened along by the immaturity of a brother or sister in Christ. We're not very careful. That can be a real challenge. People like that are particularly a challenge to elders, elderships, and even elders' wives. I say that because it's the unfortunate situation that a lot of times our elders' wives hear about the things that the elders ought to have heard about first, but nobody was really brave enough to take it to the elders. These kind of people can be real challenges to preachers. And preachers' wives, too, for the same reason as elders' wives. They can be a challenge to deacons and deacons' wives, ditto. Not to mention what a strain they put on each and every single member of a congregation. But there's something that you and I need to be reminded of here. There may very well be a few of us here tonight who have never stepped out of line. There may be one or two of us who've never fallen behind a step or two, who have never failed to measure up, but I doubt it, and I'm sure not one of them. As I stated in the very beginning of this lesson, I'm afraid sometimes we forget about the fact that we're all in this together. I hope you paid particular attention to the words of that song that Mike led just before the sermon, particularly verse 3, which says, "When free from envy, scorn, and pride, our wishes all above, each can his brother's failings hide and show a brother's love." When love in one delightful stream through every bosom flows, when union sweet and dear esteem in every action glows. Now let's read that verse one more time. We who are strong in faith should help the weak with their weaknesses and not please only ourselves. Notice that last phrase, and not please only ourselves. Why do you suppose, just why do you think maybe the Holy Spirit inspired Paul to include that? Because the truth of the matter is, we seem to have that tendency sometimes to believe that we've worked hard to be where we are, and therefore we have the right and the privilege not to be bothered by those who constantly need help, those who constantly need watching, those who constantly need exhorting, those with whom we have to beg and plead to live right. You see, it has always been a great danger of the righteous to become self-righteous and to become impatient with those who have not matured. For the rest of our time, let's look at some of the specifics of what to do. And based on what Paul writes in 1 Thessalonians chapter 5, verse 14, at the close of this letter, 1 Thessalonians, Paul mentions several general, what some have called housekeeping issues, things that have to do with the general well-being of God's people and the family of a congregation. He talks about the respect and the appreciation that we're to have for the eldership. He encourages us to not seek revenge when we have been wrong. He says in the closing words of this chapter, pray without ceasing. He says that we should test everything. He says that we should cling to that which is good. He says that we should abstain from the very appearance of evil. But I want us to look specifically at what he says in verse 14. From the King James Version, he says, now we exhort you, brethren, warn them that are unruly, comfort the feeble-minded, support the weak, be patient toward all men. For just a minute or two on each point, let's take each phrase by itself. And I'm going to read them to you from the English Standard Version. First of all, he says, we admonish you, brothers. We urge you, brothers, admonish the idle. The King James uses the word unruly. The word originally, in the original language, was a word which came from the military terminology, and it was actually a word that was used for a soldier who fell out of the ranks or a soldier who failed to keep step. It's translated into English unruly or even idle, and some have said, because obviously the brethren at Thessalonica had a problem with idleness, believing in a mistaken way that the coming of the Lord was just around the corner. Many of them had stopped doing their work. Many of them had chosen unemployment to sit and wait until the Lord would come. Whatever the case may have been, unruly, idle, those who are not working, Paul says we should admonish them. Think about that in a spiritual sense. Are we workers for the Lord? As we sang that song this morning, are we in need of admonishment? Do we find ourselves idle when it comes time to be out and bringing in the harvest, or are we those who need to be admonished? Is this a strength with us, or is this a weakness? Admonish those who are idle. Secondly, he says, encourage the faint-hearted. King James Version, comfort the feeble-minded. Feeble-minded has taken on a little bit more of a negative connotation these days than it had when the King James Version was translated. Faint-hearted is probably a term which comes closer to the meaning of the original language, and it was a word which indicated one who was timid or shy in a physical sense, and therefore the spiritual sense of one who is faint-hearted is one who lacks courage, spiritual fortitude, one whose courage is too small to launch out solidly. Those who are holding back, those who have the ability to do more, but because they're afraid, they're in need of encouragement. They need to be comforted. They need for those who are strong to help them grow stronger. There are some right ways and some wrong ways. It's, I don't think, proper to do like the fabled mother bird does in pushing the young out of the nest and letting them learn to fly on the way down or perish as they crash on the ground. That's not my sense of what the New Testament teaches us to do to those or with those who lack the courage. Kind of like teaching a baby to walk. It begins very gently at first. Avoiding carpet burns and so forth for obvious reasons. Those who lack courage in a spiritual sense will not overcome that deficiency overnight. It takes work. Next, Paul says, support the weak or help the weak. I like the New Living Translation, which says, take tender care of those who are weak. There's just something about that wording that seems to put a little bit more into it. Take tender care of those who are weak. You notice nowhere in these instructions is there an order to take up everybody's slack. to go through and gather up all of the burdens and the work that they are supposed to be doing and do them for them, much like you might do to a dependent child, in place of going to the trouble and taking the time to teach and instruct and show and help that child to learn and develop. I'll just do it myself. That's not what it's telling us to do. In some situations, weakness is a little bit frustrating. Sometimes it's downright disgusting to those of us who believe we're strong. Usually, though, only because it's not us who is weak. And it prompts us to sometimes ask questions like, well, how many times do we need to forgive him of that? Or how many times is she going to walk the aisle? You know, that's what she said 2 weeks ago when she responded to the invitation. You know, it hasn't been long since he was just restored. Those are the kind of attitudes, words that are born of the attitudes that are in opposition to Paul's instruction here to support the weak, help the weak, take tender care of those who are weak. And then finally, he says, be patient with them all. When the Bible tells me to be patient, I find myself very desperately needing to recall the long-suffering of God with me, because He has poured so much of it out on me. And oh, if only we could develop the ability to in turn show the kind of patience to others that God has poured out upon us. Be patient with them all. We said last Sunday night that in Paul's day there was nothing any more dreadful than a shipwreck. It certainly paints a very impressive word picture. Those who have made shipwreck of their faith are those who began in weakness and became weaker. Perhaps for various reasons. Perhaps they refused all of the help that was offered. God doesn't expect us to force anyone into heaven, nor will He do so. And yet perhaps most of the cases of those who fall away are not the cases of people who refused the help, but cases where people just were simply ignored. And there's another song that we sing sometimes. Blessed be the tie that binds our hearts in Christian love. The fellowship of kindred hearts is like to that above. The love that we should have for one another should be the drive that causes us to reach out to those who are weak. Not to make allowances for them, not to make excuses for them, not to do their work for them, but to bring them back because their souls are at stake. If you're subject to our Savior's invitation, we invite you to respond as we stand together and sing.